The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show about everything.
And we do mean everything.
Yes, even that. Yep, and that too.
Oh, you bet. Definitely that.
Now here's everything you want to know, host Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Is this hour one? Yes, it is. We've just begun. It's Friday. Now look, yesterday was one of the most exciting days I've had in 5 years on this program. As you know, I guess you know, we had Roger Stone as our guest talking about, first of all, if you don't know who Roger Stone is, I don't want to get into explaining it right now, but major, major figure treated truly horrifically by the, I guess what we have to call the deep state government. He came to faith in Jesus. Now, look, you might not be a Christian, but I'm telling you, when you hear his story, it kind of makes you wonder. Because I'm convinced it's real and it's beautiful. It's moving. Earlier this week, you probably have already watched our Bevel and Beatty conversation. If you missed that one, you got to go back, send that to your friends. Albin, we've had so many great guests. Brandon Strock.
Oh my goodness.
My goodness. What an amazing character. Just wonderful. And on Monday we've got David Wood. That's a Miracle Monday. Oh my goodness. That's that story. I mean, we taped that a little while ago, but I've never heard anything like it. It involves attempted murder, among other many things. Horrific. Yeah. And then ultimately so redemptive that it's very, very moving.
And you know who else we're going to try to get for next week, if not next week, the week after. Phil Robertson has a brand new book coming out in early August, and so we're going to have him on. Phil Robertson,
you know,
Dynasty.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but a friend has just stepped onto the set. It's our old friend Mike Lindell. Hey, how are you, Mike? He's a big sponsor to the show, so we're not going to tell him not to walk onto the set. Mike, anything you want to share with the group? You know what? It happens to me every time. It's a
speechless.
It's a bobblehead doll of Mike Lindell. I thought it was the real thing. It's so realistic. I guess this is a good opportunity for me to mention that if you go to mypillow.com and use the code Eric, you can buy everything with such a discount as will make heads wag, quite in the way that these bobblehead heads wag. It's kind of amazing. But you can get Mike Lindell bobblehead dolls, which is who doesn't want that? That's going to help you sleep. But actually, I think that would keep me awake. I think if I had this near the bed, Albin, I think it would freak me out. And all night long, I would say, Mr. Mumbles, it's just a little freaky. But the point is that our biggest sponsor is MyPillow. If you use the code Eric, you get a whopping discount. And they wanted us to mention they're selling masks. You know, masks. Remember masks? No, we're not talking Superman masks for Halloween. We're talking COVID prevention masks. They're selling hand sanitizer. They're selling the bobblehead dolls. And they have a huge discount now, 30% off the mattress topper if you use the code Eric. Not only do they give you 30% off if you use the code Eric, but they will literally throw in two pillows, two standard size My Pillows, maybe they don't really throw them, but they'll place them gently into the box for free when nobody's looking, as long as you use the code Eric. I should mention that.
My wife just, I'm not kidding. My wife, for my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, like her side of the family, she just ordered like about $800 or $900 worth of towels. The towels were incredible. The sheets, all kinds of sheets, the mattress topper. Now, she put in the code Albin and got like a nickel off. And I said, no, it's Eric.
Pity.
Eric.
That's a pity. Well, thank your wife for supporting the cause. Now, Chris Himes, how much money has your wife spent? And be careful. Be careful what you say. Actually, you know what? No. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about your chicken ranch, because we're gonna get into a really, serious conversation at any minute. But before we get serious, you are raising chickens in your backyard in view of the Lincoln Tunnel. In other words, you don't live out in the country. How's it going, man?
It's going good. We just got Easy Pass toll devices for the chickens, so they can go in and out of the Lincoln Tunnel whenever they want. But in seriousness, last night, we have the little ones still in a cage. There's six little ones that are not in the coop yet, and two that are in the coop. They're older. And the little ones got freaked out because there was a huge storm. You must have seen it that came through yesterday.
That was the serious storm. That was 2 days ago. That was Wednesday night. I was outside at a restaurant, and it was as if, I had an instinct to build an ark, and I've never had that before. I've never seen anything like it. It was scary, actually.
Yeah, there was a lot of
the Statue of Liberty, spelled out "Meeny, meeny, tickle you farson." I don't know what that means, but it was incredible.
Yeah. So the chickens were terrified. The little ones. So we brought. They've been out on the porch. So we brought the whole cage inside because they were all huddled in one corner, kind of, sadly chirping. So they enjoyed to have a little refuge from the storm.
Would it be possible for us to get tiny Mike Lindell My Pillow pet pillows for the chickens? Would you think appreciate that just as a gesture? I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully they're not like down. I don't think there's down fillers, but
that would be like cannibal sleeping. That would be wrong.
Yeah, but by the way, that bobblehead, which people can buy if they want on the website. Now, I have to tell you, the other day, Eric, you when we finished recording, you left your monitor running, and I came back in the evening to turn my computer on. I saw your study. It was like 9:10 at night, and the bobblehead. Now, you're not going to believe it, but the bobblehead actually came to life and was going through your office and was making edits on your upcoming
people. Well, you know what? You know why? I'm like a VIP, because I have a show that is he's the main sponsor. So let's say they sent me, I didn't want you to mention it because there's so few of these, but they sent me one of these VIP bobblehead dolls that really is some kind of a being, and we're freaking out my audience right now, and we should stop. I want to get back to the idea that your chickens have little poultry easy passes that they can go in and out of the tunnel. That's really sweet, and it's good thing that Chris Christie is no longer the governor, because you knew that he was using the trafficking of poultry kind of to get back at the mayor of Hackensack. And this is too much inside information.
Yeah, that was Chickengate.
Chickengate. There you go. Chickengate. Who's coming up in 3 minutes now?
We have David Barton and his son, Tim.
Oh, my gosh. David Barton and his son have written a book on American history. And it's really interesting to me because in their book, I'm not making this up, they go over some of the stuff that I have in my book, If You Can Keep It. And you begin to realize that people are beginning to figure out that we've not been teaching some crucial basics. In other words, stuff that was, in history books 80 years ago, that everyone in America sort of knew that there was an element of God's providence in this country. Now, that's not talking about manifest destiny. That's not talking about America as being God's chosen nation or anything like that. But it's not wrong to see God's hand in the history of nations and empires, and Benjamin Franklin, of all people, who was here just a minute ago. Benjamin Franklin spoke about that at the Constitutional Convention. And I think it's important that we realize that this is made of wax. This is not really an effigy, like a Jeremy Bentham effigy mummy of Benjamin Franklin that I'm holding in my hand. But if you're listening on the radio, just ignore all this nonsense. In a couple of seconds, we're going to have a very substantive conversation with David Barton and his son. But the point is that when you learn American history, it really galvanizes you to love the country because loving means seeing what's wrong and wanting to fix it. But it's one of the reasons I want to have the Bartons on, because the book that they wrote is just loaded with important information. And again, it talks about stuff that if you've read my book, If You Can Keep It, you'll know some of it. But their book covers way more, obviously, than I do. So when we come back, we will have them. And then in hour two, we have a guest talking about the life of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and Ty Cobb. He's written two amazing biographies, truly. Stay tuned for hour two. Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, I care about the United States of America. I think it's kind of important. I think it's kind of important that we know the actual history of the country. And I keep saying that over the last 50 years, we've not been teaching the history of the country. And as a result of that, we've been suffering as a nation. That's why I thank God for my friends David and Tim Barton, who keep writing and talking about the real history of this country. David and Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having us. It's good to be with you.
Tell me all about this book. I'm just dying. When I heard that you're coming out with this book, it's out. Tell me about this book, you know, the whole thing, why you decided to write this book for now.
It's an American history book for sure, but it covers a lot of American history that we don't hear much about anymore or that we don't even understand anymore. And with it, we really kind of give a lot of the apologetics of what's going on now. I mean, you see what's happening with cancel culture, with statues being torn down, and people don't even know why they're tearing them down or what they represent. It's just they got to go. And so we're really kind of providing some of the underpinnings. I mean, there is a reason that there were 600 Columbus statues in America across the world. Columbus used to be, he wasn't a perfect guy, but he did some really good stuff, and we should know that. Nobody knows anything good about Columbus today. So it really is the good, the bad, the ugly of American history with some apologetics and a lot of stories.
Yeah, one of the things that we would point out is we've actually been working on this book for several years. We're grateful that finally it's at a place we're coming out. We had to be very selective about how much we can tell, because we're going to tell a lot more than we were able to just in this book. But we would now say providentially, since we started on this 3 years ago, we didn't know that there was going to be this big cancel culture movement we're seeing right now, where statues are being torn down. And I would say providentially, many of the stories we cover are the stories of the very people who now are having their statues torn down. And we tell the whole of the story in many regards, saying, look, we know they weren't perfect, but the reason they should be celebrated, the reason they should be honored, or maybe the reason they were honorable people, was because of more of their story. And we give a lot of those details of the story so that we understand, even though as Christians we know nobody's perfect, everybody is a sinner who needs a savior. In the midst of that context, we recognize that a perfect God uses imperfect people and does great things through them. And that is much the story of America.
A lot of times liberals bristle when we talk about the Christian roots of this country. Where I always have to clarify that, to my mind, the reason we can be and have been such a dramatically Christian country in so many ways is because we are not officially Christian. We have freedom of religion in America. Nonetheless, it's inescapable, and I've written about it myself and talked about it, that the roots of America are dramatically influenced by Christian believers and by people who, even if they themselves weren't theologically orthodox Christians, nonetheless understood the centrality of Christian faith and virtue in self-government. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, one of the notions today is that if we say America's a Christian nation, that meant that everything that happened in America had to be Christian or approved by maybe a church leader or a pastor. And we lose the idea that, no, the reason we say we're a Christian nation was because Christianity was the foundation upon which America was built. That, you know, Eric, as you mentioned, not every single founding father was a Christian. We actually know all of their stories, and we know the ones who were and were not. And even though the majority were people who professed Christianity, even the ones who didn't, like, for example, a Benjamin Franklin, said that we still need to have the Bible as the foundation of what we do. We still want to encourage people to go to church, because even guys like Franklin believed that there was a God. He questioned the divinity of Jesus, wasn't sure that he really knew that Jesus was divine, but he believed that there was a God who rewarded good and punished wicked, and God had revealed moral truth in his Bible. And if people would go to church, they would learn more about that moral truth. This is from Benjamin Franklin, the least religious founding father, arguably. And when we say Christianity really was what shaped and influenced America, it's not because every American was Christian, but it's because every American grew up in a culture that was shaped by Christianity and the Bible.
Yeah, part of the misunderstanding, too, I think, goes to the fact that when people today talk about a Christian nation, they've redefined it into what they don't want it to be, a theocracy. And when you look back, we have three Supreme Court decisions, one in 1844, one in 1931, another in 1892, where the Supreme Court unanimously said, we're a Christian people, we're a Christian nation, we're a Christian country. The 1892 case is the one I like best because it defines what a Christian nation is. Justice Brewer, who actually gave the unanimous opinion for the court, all the justices, said, we're a Christian country because Christianity has so largely influenced and shaped our culture and our institutions. It wasn't because everybody here was a Christian or you got more benefits if you were. I mean, starting in the early 1600s, we had Muslims in America. We had every conceivable religion you can think of. But our culture, our institutions, our values were shaped by the Bible. And that's what made us a Christian nation, as opposed to today where they say, oh, unless you're a Christian, you can't vote or you can't be elected. That's what they think it means. And that's never what it's meant, ever.
People don't understand religious liberty. And I think that's why they leap to statements like Christians want to turn America into a theocracy. I mean, that's so absurd. I have to laugh. But then I get sad when I think that there are people ignorant enough actually to believe that. I mean, I don't know a single Christian that I would think is a real Christian that doesn't believe in freedom of religion or that thinks that you can somehow force religion. And in fact, if ever there was a country in the history of the world that was formed on that idea, I mean, most of the people came to our shores because they were fleeing enforced religion, and they understood the idea that it just doesn't work that way. Even if you could force it, it would be a bad idea. And they enshrined religious liberty in our founding documents. And people today don't seem to get that. They don't understand how freedom works, or how religious liberty works, or frankly how Christian faith works. Because there are religions, and the Christian religion in the past as well, that have been imposed by governments. So that is part of history, but it is not part of American history. And that's what makes us unique in this respect, at least.
Yeah, one of the things, actually, as you're pointing this out, we highlight in the book many of those stories from people who came to America because they were escaping the persecution of the king, of the crown, and of whatever denomination the king or crown had chosen, whether it was Catholic or Anglican or right wherever they were. Oftentimes, the king would choose a denomination. So we go through people like the Pilgrims, like the Puritans, like Quakers, many people who fled to the shores of America seeking refuge to be able to enjoy their religious freedom. And Eric, you're right. A lot of times people don't understand even the reason we have religious freedom in America today is because of Christianity. It is inside of Christianity that you get the idea. And by the way, I'm saying Christianity, really the Judeo-Christian idea, because Jews largely believe many of these ideas too, because many of these are found in the Old Testament, not just the New Testament. But if you take Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, God said, here's what's good, here's what's bad, but God gave them a choice. When you look at Joshua, when he was leading the Israelites going into Canaan, Joshua told them, guys, you're going to get a choice. You can choose if you want to worship the gods from Egypt where he fled, or the gods in the land that we're living now, or the God who brought us out of Egypt, who's leading us in the promised land. And this is where you have the famous passage where Joshua says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The point is, inside of Christianity is where we get the notion that there is a freedom, a choice of religion. This is not something that was going on in the rest of the world at the time, and it's not something that even largely goes on in the rest of the world right now. America is still very unique in recognizing the freedom of religion, and most people, again, don't know that is a uniquely Christian or Judeo-Christian idea.
And that's one of the things we cover in the book is the difference between Christian beliefs and biblical beliefs, because there were a lot of Christian places across Europe that said, in the name of Christ, you're going to be this religion, or in the name of Christ, we're going to kill Jews. That's not biblical. That may be a Christian leader saying it. That's not biblical. And so the biblical stuff was, as Tim said, you know, even with Joshua and choice in the garden, when Elijah's on top of Mount Carmel, do you want to follow Baal? Do you want to follow God? It's your choice. Jesus said, whoever wants to, follow me. So it's always a choice. And where there's biblical Christianity, you get a lot of choices. Where there's not biblical Christianity, you get a lot of coercion, even in a secular place. A lot of secular governments are very coercive. Progressive secularists tend to be very coercive. You will do it their way. Where you have biblical Christianity, you get lots of choices.
Well, that's what I find interesting is that with the founding documents of the United States, as with the Bible, just because it states the truth doesn't mean people are going to live it out. I mean, we had chattel slavery in America. That doesn't mean that the founders were all in favor of chattel slavery. In other words, we seem to have to evolve through some of these periods. And so even when I think of Luther, the man who in some ways led to religious liberty, he did not understand religious liberty himself. We're going to go to a break. I'm talking to David and Tim Barton with Wall Builders, wallbuilders.com.
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, plowing through the ragged sky.
President Trump has a huge announcement for his top supporters. We'll be celebrating the 2020 Republican National Convention this summer, and he wants you to enter for your chance to join him at the convention. If you win, the team will cover the flight, hotel, and give you VIP passes for yourself and a guest. All you have to do is text Metaxas to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump at the convention. Again, that's Metaxas to 88022 to enter to win this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be a special guest, paid for by Donald J. Trump for President. Folks, I'm talking to David Barton of Wall Builders and his son, Tim Barton, also of Wall Builders. And we're talking about the roots of Christian faith in the United States of America. And I was just saying to both of you that what's interesting is that just because something's true doesn't mean the people who claim to be Christians or claim to be pro-American are going to live out what they should be living out, right? So, you know, we have Martin Luther King Jr. saying that the founding documents were a promissory note. They didn't instantly deliver into history what they eventually would deliver, and neither did the Bible in the sense that, you know, you have 1,500 years of coerced Christianity. The Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, they weren't saying, hey, people can do what they want. And even Luther, when he sort of ends the Roman Catholic monopoly, he does the same thing himself. And he forces people, if you're not going to be Catholic, then you've got to be evangelical Lutheran. And we're going to use the force of the sword and the force of the state. We know that that's wrong. And it took its time to work its way out through history. But by the time you get to 1776, by the grace of God, those Christian elements have worked themselves into history. And that's one of the reasons that this is the greatest and freest country in the world. At least that's what I believe.
Yeah, and you see that throughout history, and you're right. There is a progression, and this is one of the things that people a lot of times don't get with the cancel culture and the statues today. If you go back to Genesis 6, when the world is so goofed up, it is so bad that God says, all right, I'm going to destroy this. We're going to start again. I'm going to take Noah and his three sons and their wives, and we're doing this over. It's interesting that the Bible tells us in Genesis 6:9 that Noah was a righteous man. The next phrase says, in his generation. Because if you look, Noah had a trouble with public drunkenness. We see that in the Bible. And so what happened with him and his sons, that may not be acceptable today. But oh my gosh, when you look at where Noah was compared to his generation, when they're all killing and raping and stealing, and Noah was a righteous man, and that's where so many of the statues are. They're not perfect, but when you compare them to what the culture was then and how they moved the culture forward, it is a progression over time.
Yeah, one of the things that gets lost is you always want to judge people in the context of the time in which they live. So Noah is a great example, because certainly if we're talking about people, we want to be leaders in our church. We probably don't want people that get drunk and pass out from their drunkenness, right? I mean, there's some components where like, yeah, that's probably not really a good thing, except you judge them in the context of the time in which they live. And so even looking, for example, at many people on statues, the statues are being torn down. One of the significant things to note about them is the reason they're on statues in the first place is because they did something significant worthy of notice. And there might be a couple of exceptions. You know, maybe a statue is put up in protest to something going on. Maybe there's a couple of Confederate statues that fall in that category. But largely speaking, if there is on a statue, there's a reason they did something to get themselves on that statue. What happens today is very few people know the full story of that individual, much less know the context in which that individual lived. And so we say, wait a second, this person did a bad thing. Even though that bad thing we can acknowledge was bad, might have been culturally accepted in the time in which they lived. And so to say, well, they weren't enlightened enough, but if they were just like the people around them, but they were more exceptional, or they pointed in a new direction where nobody else was pointing, for example, Thomas Jefferson. When Jefferson does a draft of the Declaration of Independence, his original draft, people should go back and read that. And if you go back and read it, he has a grievance, and it's one of the largest grievances in that declaration, where he explains that we have tried to end slavery in many of our colonies, and the king has vetoed those laws, and we've tried to stop the slave trade. And this king, who professes to be a Christian, he kidnaps people from another land that never offended him, and he brings them to our shores, and he forces them on us, and we're penalized for it, and we want to put a stop to this. Well, Jefferson writes this long grievance about wanting to end slavery and the slave trade in America. When that declaration is presented before the Continental Congress, Jefferson writes that much to his regrets, there were two states who did not support the measure. At the time, those states were South Carolina and Georgia. And Jefferson says that if those two states would have supported, we could have really solved this problem. Well, John Hancock, who was the president of Congress, says they're only going to put in the declaration what everybody agrees to, because this needs to be a unanimous declaration so we can be totally united. But the point is, most people have no idea that Jefferson ever did anything anti-slavery, or George Washington, that he did anti-slavery things. They don't know the whole story, or the fact that the reason George Washington is on monuments is because he was the father of the country. What he did as commander of the military in the Revolution, or at the Constitutional Convention, when he is the guy leading that convention, or as the first president, when he sets a tone for what a president does, and then he peacefully transfers power after two terms and steps down. He was an amazing leader. The reason he was honored was not because he was a perfect man. Rather, he was honored because he did very honorable things, even though he was not a perfect man. And when we don't know their stories, when we don't judge them in the context of the time in which they live, it's easy to point and go, well, they weren't perfect, therefore we shouldn't celebrate them, forgetting the biblical standard that says all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, meaning that nobody's perfect, that everybody is messed up and needs a savior. And what that means is we shouldn't simply judge people in history by how perfect they were or were not. We judge them rather by the contributions they made, and we judge them in the context of the culture in which they lived. When you look at the founding fathers, when slavery was a legal and promoted institution, the fact that any founding fathers would be anti-slavery means that they were doing something very honorable at a time when that was widely accepted.
Yeah, people today don't seem to realize that the whole movement to abolish slavery is really a relatively recent movement. There was no law that banned the slave trade in the world, anywhere in the world, before 1807. That means everywhere in the world, the slave trade was legal. It was going on. And the first law to ban the slave trade that was signed by anybody was signed by Thomas Jefferson. Founding fathers were kind of on the front edge of that. They didn't get it done, and they weren't perfect. At least they were trying to move the ball down the court.
We need to know our history. We'll be right back with David and Tim Barton of wallbuilders.com. Don't go away. I'm talking to the Bartons, Tim and David of Wall Builders. The new book is called The American Story, The Beginnings. Now, I know, David, you've written so many books on American history. What is it about this book that makes it different? For whom did you write this book?
This book is written for every single American, It presents American history, a lot of stories we've heard about, but we don't know details of. But what's unique is we have really a, we look back to the way that early history books were written for generations and centuries in America. We've returned the concept of providential history. For example, as you look in the Founding Fathers' writings, they talk about how often God intervened in their affairs. And so when you look at the Battle of Long Island in August of 1776, unbelievable things happen that make no sense unless you believe that there's a God who gets involved in the affairs of men.
Yeah, for example, the Battle of Long Island, Washington with his much smaller army, 8,000 troops, 32,000 British are coming up against them, and they're pinned against the shores, and they're trying to escape, and it's not going well. The British fleet's coming up behind them, but all of a sudden a wind starts blowing, a storm comes, and the British fleet can't come up and pin them in behind. And then that night, the storm calms down, and Washington's able to start getting boats, and he starts getting men off the island. But the next morning, they're not all off the island. The British are going to see them. They're going to come overwhelm them. But right as it starts to get a little gray, a heavy fog lifts off the ground, and it blocks total view, where one of the officers said he couldn't even see more than 6 yards in front of him. And it wasn't until the last boat gets across the off the island that the fog lifts. And there's just so many moments where you go, a lot of things don't make very much sense, and even, or maybe even especially in weather moments where nobody can control the weather except maybe God. And so when you see people surviving where they probably should have been conquered, they probably should have been captured or killed, and they survive because of this crazy weather moment, well, as Christians, we know that God does involve himself in the affairs of men, and sometimes, and maybe even largely, in the affairs of nations. And so we can point and say, it sure seems like that's a moment when God showed up. And we point to a lot of the writings of guys who were there who talk about it was the hand of providence who protected us in that moment. So we will acknowledge it looks like God was doing something. And then we show that they acknowledge that God was a part of this. So one of the important parts of the American story is recognizing that this is not just a history book of who was where, when, and what happened there, but recognizing also that because there is a God, because God does care and love about people and God involves himself in their lives, there's many moments that you can look, and maybe not always with absolute certainty say, we know right here God did this, but there certainly are times when you can question and say, okay, that doesn't make any sense unless there is a God who is intervening in this moment.
And one of the things also that makes it unique is that we do a lot of biographical history. It used to be in history we told the stories of individuals, and today we've gotten into dates and places and events. The story is really important. God uses people. We're told in Revelation, one of the ways we overcome the enemy is by our story or our testimony. And so going back and seeing a biography of some of these people, letting them become human again and seeing what was going on at the time, that's another thing that's unique about this history book that makes it different from so many that are out there.
I have to say that, you know, when you mentioned the Battle of Long Island, the Battle of Brooklyn, when I discovered that story, I couldn't believe it. I said, how do you see this as anything other than a miracle of God? I mean, it's just one of those crazy stories. And then what happens to me every time I hear a story like that is I think, why haven't I heard it before? So I put that story in my book, If You Can Keep It, because I said, Americans need to know that it does seem like God has had his hand on this country. And I think fair-minded people get that. I remember the first time I recognized that was when I did research on the story of Squanto. And I'm reading all these versions of it. And then when I read the founding documents, I thought, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is a miracle. This is an insane miracle that happened at the beginning of the American story. Why aren't we teaching this in schools? This doesn't make any sense if you take God out of it. And there's so many stories like that. Michael Medved wrote a beautiful book where he added some stories along these lines. And I'm thrilled to hear that you're writing, as you put it, a providential history of America. But I want to be clear, too, to say that this is not a Christian history. History is history. When you tell the story, that's just called history. And so you guys are just writing history, but What you're doing and what I do to some extent is we're forced to remind people of what for many decades has been hidden from them. That's really, in a way, what you're doing is you're redeeming the story of America.
Yeah, a lot of the stories we cover are stories that have been covered in older history books several generations ago, not only of Squanto, but also of the Battle of Long Island. But you throw in George Washington, John Hancock said, maybe the greatest ever Providence General Richard they saw was with Benedict Arnold and the treason that went on. And most folks don't even know that story. They know he's a traitor. They don't know how it came to be or how it saved Washington's life or the Battle of Brandywine and Patrick Ferguson and so many other cool stories.
Yeah, there really are dozens of these moments that we highlight through the book. And one of the things that's unique about a lot of what we write is we actually have many of the original documents for the stories that we are telling. There's more than 1,000 footnotes in this book where we quote so often, not just our telling of the story, but the people who were there saying, this is what happened. This is where we believe God showed up. This was divine intervention. This was a miracle from God. And Eric, you're right. A lot of times people think, well, you're just telling the Christian perspective. Well, no, you're actually quoting the people who were there. This is just the history of what actually happened. It just so happens that in America, our history largely involves God and God's intervention in the lives of people.
It really does seem to me inescapable. In other words, when people say that the story of Squanto, for example, is coincidence, you think, if you think that's coincidence, you don't believe miracles exist because there's just no way this could have happened humanly. And if you believe that happened humanly, okay, then what about the story of Long Island? What about these other stories? Did they all happen coincidentally? If you get that many coincidences working in the favor of a nation, it kind of has to make you wonder if God's hand is somehow on that nation. And I always want to be clear that we're always blessed to be a blessing. So America is not blessed just to bless America. It's to bless the whole world. And by God's grace, we've been able to do some of that. We're going to go to a final break. I'm talking to the Bartons, David and Tim with Wall Builders. Don't go away. I'm talking to the Bartons, David and Tim. They're with Wall Builders, wallbuilders.com. Check it out. Okay, you mentioned Benedict Arnold. I thought I knew that story. What's the miraculous part of that story that I have never heard?
It's a whole string of unlikely coincidences, and they all happen one after another. The fact that Benedict Arnold was selling out Washington and West Point, and Major Andre, who was there, Major Andre is going back to New York to a British-held portion of New York. Everybody in that British-held portion is loyalist. They chase the Patriots out. He encounters people. The people he encountered happened to be some American soldiers who had just escaped from a British prison camp. And he starts talking to them like they're loyalists, and they look at it.
Which, by the way, because they actually, one of the guys was wearing a jacket from the British. And so he's in loyalist territory. This guy's dressed like, probably he's a loyalist, he's a British guy, who says, guys, I'm so glad you're here. I just escaped from the Americans. There's so much we're doing. Can you guys help lead me to safety? And these guys say, oh, well, what do you mean? What's going on? Tell us more of the story. So he starts telling them some detail, not really giving away too much, but enough they go, okay, by the way, we're not loyalists. We're patriots, and we're going to have to hold you and talk to you for a while. They start searching him. They're looking for papers. They can't find it. They say, okay, maybe he doesn't have them. Let's let him go. Let's check one more time. All of a sudden, they find these papers in his boot. Oh, my goodness. This guy is going to sell out, and he's a traitor. Well, they take him back and turn him in. They take him to Benedict Arnold, not knowing the guy he was working with was actually Benedict Arnold. But it's so many moments along the way in the story. It doesn't make sense that these three guys escaped at just the right time and happened to grab a jacket that looked just like the loyalist and happen to run into Major Andre, who just happens to tell them, and then they can't find the papers, and then they just happen to find the papers. It would seem as if God was helping in this situation protect and preserve America for a future generation.
And when you know the full story, that's why people like Hancock and Washington say this is the greatest, and they called it a greatest train of providential events. I mean, it was tick, 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 tick. You just go right down the line. It was a massive chain of providential events.
Knowing our history, it seems to me, and again, when I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It, it's the same concept. I thought this is the only way we can save this country is if we teach young people especially our history, because the history speaks for itself. It seems to me that your book does this in spades, and I know that's part of why you wrote it.
Yeah, it really is, to help people relearn the story of America. Right now, most young people can tell you more bad things about America than good things about America. And it's not because that there is a lack of bad things we can identify, but it's really because we don't know the story of the good. And one of the things we even learned from the Bible is that God tells us the whole story, the good, the bad, and the ugly. In America today, we largely don't know the story of the good. And a lot of what we even have learned about being bad is a dishonest story. So we go back and say, here's the honest story. Here's what slavery looked like in America. Here's what the founding fathers looked like, imperfections and all. Here's what early discovery looked like. Here's what the pilgrims looked like. In Squanto, we tell the story and we show America, blemishes and all. But when you learn the full story, you judge it in context, you learn that even though America is not perfect, we are one of the most special and blessed nations in the history of the world.
I would say amen to that. It's always a joy to talk to you. The only thing better would be to be with you in person, but the Lord will arrange that. Congratulations on the new book, The American Story, The Beginnings. Thank you for the work you do at Wall Builders. I hope everybody listening will go to Wall Builders at the website, wallbuilders.com. Brothers, Americans, God bless you.
Thanks, Eric. Always great to be with you, brother.